I remember in 2019, I was in a terrible place to begin with, and I could barely get out of bed, let alone make it downstairs to the sofa. Watching the 2019 Open at Royal Portrush, to see how Rory McIlroy, having an emotional moment on national television, being interviewed by Tim Barter, people remember that year, that was Rory's home Open in Northern Ireland. It meant so much to him. He didn't make the cut. And for him to cry like that and be emotional and vulnerable, I look back now, and the fact that I remember it so clearly, it's really struck a chord with me and it helped me. Hi and welcome to a special bonus edition episode of the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. I am Chris Lynch, your host. I am buzzing today. Well, first of all, I'm buzzing for the Open about to begin at Royal Troon. We're now less than 24 hours away from, well, at least when I'm stood here recording this episode. It's Wednesday the 17th of July. We're now less than 24 hours away from, in my view, the best golfing major starting tomorrow at Royal Troon. It's an event I have very special memories of, which I'll go on to explain a bit more about that in this episode. And I'm here to speak to you in this bonus episode about golf and sobriety. Why this episode and why now is maybe the question that you're asking. Well, let me explain why this episode, first and foremost, and why this topic. I write monthly journal articles for Golf Yourself Healthy. I have been writing them in parallel with producing podcast episodes for Golf Yourself Healthy since February this year. You can go and read our back catalogue of journal articles on golfyourselfhealthy.com. And so just the other day, to mark the occasion of my 5-year sober birthday, I wrote an article called Golf Yourself Sober and published it on golfyourselfhealthy.com. So I decided that it would be a good idea to record an accompanying podcast episode to go alongside that journal article because, well, I guess some of you might enjoy reading more than you do listening, or the other way around, or you might enjoy both things. You might love Golf Yourself Healthy that so much that you need an article to read and a podcast episode to listen to. So I think what it means for me is, well, sobriety means a lot to me, and I'm very proud of being 5 years sober from drinking, and I want to talk about it. I want to share that story with you, but I especially, as with everything at Golf Yourself Healthy, want to talk about it within the context of golf. And so in this episode, I'll be talking about how golf has helped my sobriety and how flipping it around, sobriety has actually helped my golf. And I'll be very clear in saying this at this stage. I'm not here to preach sobriety to anyone. I'm not here to preach anything in Golf Yourself Healthy. All I'm here to do is to talk about how golf is good for you, how golf is good for me, and how, in this case, sobriety has been good for me. It's been good for my golf and the other way around. And I would say that if in what I'm about to say, please consider sharing this episode with other people who you know maybe are in recovery for alcoholism or are having a hard time right now with drinking, or anyone who you think that this subject matter will be relatable to. And I hope that you get something out of listening to what I'm about to share with you. I actually wouldn't produce this content if I didn't believe it's of value to you and to other people. So that's really one of the main reasons why I'm here. And like I said before, with me hitting 5 years of sobriety on Sunday the 14th of July 2020, 24. I had to think about that for a second there. I stopped drinking on the 14th, Sunday the 14th of July, 2019. And when I look back on that time in my life, other than, as I've talked about in this podcast, losing my son Innes, and that being one of the most traumatic times of my life, the time in my life 5 years ago where I decided to stop drinking coincided with the darkest time of my life, a time in my life where alcohol, drinking alcohol, was costing me more than just money. It was costing me my mental health. And I started to question whether or not the world would be better off without me. And I don't say that lightly. And again, as is customary at Golf Yourself Healthy, I talk about serious things. I try and inject humor into it wherever it's appropriate to do so, but I try never to shy away from the difficult conversations because I find growth within that, and I hope you will too. But I do intend to tell a few, hopefully funny stories and anecdotes along the way to try and keep things light as well. So yeah, 5 years ago, Sunday the 14th of July, 2019, that's a constant, that date. So long as I stay sober, I'll always have that proud date, that milestone to look back on. And where that birthday, sobriety birthday, occurs at the same time in every year, it always coincides with the Open, which, as I said before, I personally love that event, that tournament, the show. I've never attended it in person. I'd love to someday, though I do actually hear, listening to other golf podcasts, for example, people talking about attending it. In recent years, it looks wild, like hundreds of thousands of people attending. It's big, and it's for the social anxiety that I sometimes experience, that might be a bit overwhelming. And so in actual fact, I love watching it on TV. I find it absolute theatre to watch. And just in the last couple of days, actually, I've been watching on Sky Sports, say, for example, or on YouTube, I've been watching videos of past Opens. Some of my favorites, and probably one of my favorites in particular, was the 2016 Open when Henrik Stenson won over Phil Mickelson. And for me, you know, looking back on that one, I think I had more riding on it because I had a small bet riding on that one. I'm not a big gambler, really, but when I had a back then, I just decided Henrik Stenson was in a decent vein of form and was due a win, and I went for it. And then just going into that weekend, watching how he went head to head, toe to toe with Phil Mickelson, and watching that back the other day made me feel really nostalgic. It was at Royal Troon, where this week's tournament is being held, and I just thought about how watching that made me feel. And you know, it's not lost on me actually that, you know, here I am talking about sobriety and I've just been talking about gambling there too. And I will say at this stage, I guess, again, I don't ever pretend to come on to Golf Yourself Healthy and preach to anyone about what they should or shouldn't do, what's unhealthy or what's healthy, because everyone's on their own journey. But suffice it to say that every time I place a bet these days, which are small stakes, like a little football coupon on the weekends or something like that, I have to take a step back and just make sure and ask myself, is what I'm in, is the behavior and the things that I'm engaging in, is it good for me? Is it healthy for me? And if it starts to feel like it's costing me more than just money, like my mental health, for example, then I need to take stock of that and maybe have a serious conversation with myself. I am pleased to say that's just not my reality with gambling, but it is my reality with drinking. Like I say, I'm going to go on and share more about that in just a moment. So like I say, I hope that sharing my story will hopefully help other people. I hope it'll educate to some degree on, and in particular, how to support someone who you think may be experiencing an issue with their drinking, how to handle that sensitively, because I've got, as I'll share, some experience of this myself. And it's like in golf settings, for example, and having conversations with fellow friends and other golfers who have observed me, my drinking behavior in the past, or when I stopped drinking and how they reacted to that, and the good examples of how people reacted and the things that they said to me versus the not so good examples of that. So So let me jump into my relationship with alcohol previously and then actually leading up to how and why I decided to stop drinking. So being born and raised in Scotland, I don't think it will surprise, or I hope it won't offend anyone, when I say that Scotland is quite famed for its drinking culture. In Scotland, and at least in my experience, you have a drink when you're happy. You have a drink when you're sad. You have a drink to mark a special occasion. You have a drink to mourn the passing of someone. And actually, I say that and I'm just reminded of a time where years ago now, when I attended my grandfather's funeral, walking into the hotel where we had the wake, the funeral tea, I bumped into a guy I used to go to school with. This is outside the Cults Hotel. And as you may hear over time, Cults is the area of Aberdeen where I grew up. That's the school I went to. I play golf with a lot of guys. I still to this day play golf with a lot of guys from Cults. The Cults Lads Championship. I'm actually going to do a special episode on that golf society very soon. So look out for that and make sure you subscribe on golfyourselfhealthy.com to hear about new episodes when they come up. And maybe also give us a follow on your podcast platform of choice. So you'll hear that episode when it drops. But Cults Hotel, I'm outside the front door. Here's this guy I used to go to school with outside having a cheeky cigarette in between a few pints of beer, I'm sure. And he said, "Oh, what brings you here? Grandfather's funeral, mate. I'm really sorry to hear that. Not to worry. Time for the piss up now." And I was like, "What? Sorry? Like, what an insensitive thing to say." But he was right. The fundamental truth is he had me banged to rights. I mean, that, if I'm honest, I look back at it now and of course I'm there to mourn my grandfather. But I almost looked forward to having a drink then, you know, because that was just my done thing. You know, I enjoy drinking and I enjoyed how it made me feel. And in that scenario, I suppose it maybe took the pain away of the grief. And as I hope I'll get this message across throughout the course of this episode, I soon realized in time that I just didn't drink really like other people. Drink was doing something to me, which it didn't seem to be doing to other people, which was just causing me to question my sanity. It was causing me fear, paranoia, shame, guilt. The hangovers would get worse as the older I got. And, you know, I remember the first drink I ever had at the age of 15. I remember the pub I was in Aberdeen city centre. I remember the nightclub that we went to, Cotton Club in Aberdeen, absolutely god-awful place, by the way, which is now shut down. First experience, walk in there. Guy's just been glassed and got blood pouring down the side of his face and being escorted out the premises. And me beady-eyed and like mouth wide open, like at the age of 15, being like, how did I get in here in the first place? And why am I in here? You know, it was the Wild West. But that was kind of par for the course. There's me and my golf wordplay again. That just was par for the course on a night out in Aberdeen city centre back then. And so I find it crazy to think how I remember my first drink more clearly and the places I went to have that drink than I do my first ever round of golf, the first golf course I ever played at, the first golf ball I ever hit, which I just find curious more than anything else. So then moving to London, at which time, you know, I'm 38 now, I moved to London initially about 10 years ago, so in my late 20s, and my wife Kim and I, we were just boyfriend and girlfriend then. We moved to London together, big life move, and my drinking got worse, quite simply, when I moved to London. Getting a job in the city, in the big smoke, working in banking, work hard, play hard culture, I would turn up at the opening of an envelope, as I like to say. I would, the minute someone would say, "Oh, there's someone's leaving drinks on. Oh yeah, I think I've met them once. I don't really know them, but if there's free drink involved, I'll be there in there like swimwear, you know?" And I think the amount that I drank, the regularity with which I drank and went out and partied was putting strain on my relationship. You know, I was kind of living this bachelor lifestyle, which was just completely inconsistent with the committed relationship that I was in, and the fact that Kim and I had moved to London together for a life adventure and to be in this partnership together. And I wasn't really holding up my end of the bargain. I was out every night of the week, or most nights of the week, just partying and coming home at silly o'clock in the morning. And then actually, I don't think I would ever call in sick for work, but I was in this fortunate, you could say, position where I could hide by working from home. My company allowed me to do that, and I could just be at home and not have to show my face. And I don't think this ever affected my productivity necessarily. Maybe some days it did with the hangovers, but for the most part, it was more just I could hide away from the world. I didn't have to worry about the shame or the fear of the guilt of, did they see where I was last night? Did they see what I got up to? And that sort of thing. And so, but these thought patterns got worse and worse the more that I drank. And the worse it got, the more I felt the need to drink more to sort of just anesthetize the pain and the feelings that I was in, the emotions and the paranoia and the everything else that was going on. And it was just this vicious circle. Where I then started to notice how alcohol was presenting itself or turning up in an unhealthy way in my golf was I would attend the Ryder Cup with friends of mine. If you listen to this podcast regularly, you'll have heard my friend Ben Seabrook. He and I do special episodes called Golf Buddies Aloud. We do them periodically, and it's the two of us just shooting the breeze about life and golf. And we talk a lot about this Ryder Cup format that we do over the last however many years. We've played it at the Dorset Golf and Country Club, and we're going to France with it this year. And, you know, for the last few years I've attended it, I've been sober and I've played better golf and I've got more out of the occasion than I did when I used to drink. But when I would attend it and I was still drinking, I was noticing how I used to be a very nervous and anxious golfer. Nervous, performance nerves, stage fright. And I think this combined with my competitive streak and my want to be the best golfer I could be, to impress other people, to fit in and feel accepted, because again, as I've talked about before, I was garbage at golf to begin with, especially when I first started attending that event. And I got mocked for it. All good fun banter, like nothing sinister or anything, but that played on my mind and I felt insecure. And so I think the drinking, you know, in general, both then and before that, I drank to fit in. You know, I would drink to feel confident, to be able to network with people and feel comfortable in my own skin, and Dutch courage, as they like to say, you know. And so I experienced that. And I guess the drinking helped with the golf too. I mean, the ridiculous thing is I look back and actually, you know, around those times, and when my drinking was starting to get quite considerable and heavy, you know, the best, when I first broke 100 in golf for the first time, I was about 5 or 6 beers deep at Richmond Park Golf Club. And I felt in the zone, but that's not me anymore. And I can actually play better golf now without medicating with the use of alcohol, and actually those performance nerves and anxiety, I work on that just through more healthy means, exercise, diet, practice, you know, actually doing things in the healthy way rather than just using drink to help me calm the nerves to play better golf. But I look back on that Ryder Cup format, and there was one year in particular where I had this just kind of, I look back in it, and personally, not other people, might not agree with this, but I experienced a really crazy thought pattern, which was in the week before I went to Dorset that year for the Ryder Cup, I'd been in the Netherlands visiting my sister and my brother-in-law who live out there. And my thought process was, I was so looking forward to going out to visit them, but then I was also like, oh yeah, I can get those bottles of Grolsch out there, you know, the pop-top ones. You know, this will be perfect. I can put them in my golf bag. I can sort of open and close them. This is going to be a really efficient way to drink out in the golf course. And I did that. And then, you know, I remember being on the tee on like the third or fourth hole on the second or third day at Dorset this year. And I was one of the only guys who was just cracking open a beer at like, I don't know, 10 in the morning or something like that, you know? And, you know, there are still guys that go on that trip with me who drink from the moment they arrive at like 7 or 8 in the morning right through to the end of it. And I don't judge that, or at least I try not to judge that, because again, everyone's journey is different. And I am nobody to turn around to someone and say, you might have a problem there. That's not up to me. I know I had a problem, and what me doing that was a problem for me more than anyone else. But I couldn't help but notice and realize how I stood out then, because I was kind of the only one doing that, and it just felt different, you know, and I kind of viewed it. I just thought, yeah, this is a problem. And so then, I mean, really, to cut a long story short, on the 14th of July 2019 was the day I decided that the game was up. My drinking, like I say, was costing me my mental health. It was about to cost me my relationship with Kim. And with that, it was going to cost me, yeah, I mean, it was around that sort of time where I really started to question whether I should be alive anymore. And I never got to a dark enough place, I don't think, that I was ready to take action on that. But it was bad enough that I knew I needed help. And so me broadcasting this message now in this way is the first time I've done this so publicly. And to be honest, I've built up to this for some time now, because now that I'm 5 years on, I do share a bit more openly with people in work, in social settings. My closest family and friends know I'm sober, and they've accepted that, and they embrace that, and they love and support me for it and with it. That took time, but, you know, I'm more and more open about it these days. But I guess why I say this is because back then, 5 years ago, I didn't say anything about it to anyone, and I was signed off work for a while under the guise of, well, I don't quite remember. I think it was, you know, mental health reasons, basically. And actually, that was fundamentally true, because my mental health was in tatters. So I went to a doctor. I was prescribed, well, I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and I was prescribed medication for that, which, as I've shared in this podcast, I took until about a couple of months ago. I took it for most of the last 5 years, and I'm off that now, and I'm working through that. I think I'm better for it, and I'm in a good enough place to do that now. But in the time that I had off work, and for the first month, or in the month I was off work, and I started taking my medication and I started recovering, I had no formal help for quitting drinking and staying stopped. I have in the last 5 years, and then in about August, September 2019, I then actually went into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been in that program more or less ever since. I'll come back to that in a moment, but one of the really, really lasting memories that I have from that time 5 years ago, and where golf is concerned, is a couple of things. So in preparation for this episode, I looked back through my archives and my photo album, and shock, horror, and lo and behold, so many of my pictures are of me being out playing golf at my home club, at Richmond Golf Club, and being able to go there on a weekday when everyone else is working and I had the place to myself in the middle of summer. It was glorious. You know, it was the great demonstration for me of just how golf is good for you. I needed golf then so much. And, you know, I look at people like Tubes from Soccer AM, you know, who's now very famous alongside Jimmy Boulard. And I read this thing the other day where he talked about how golf saved his life after his recovery or during his recovery from alcoholism. And he said this comment about how he just basically replaced alcohol with golf clubs. I mean, I can relate to that. That's kind of what I was doing then too, you know. I think I had to be very careful around that time, because if I played golf in big groups with men who drank, that would have been a very unsafe environment for me, because I wouldn't have trusted myself not to drink again. But playing it on my own, playing it at a course that I really loved and felt comfortable at, was just what I needed. And then also around that time, my wife and I went on a golfing holiday together. We went to Spain. We went to a place in Soto Grande, this really, really great golf resort, actually, which is, I can't remember the name of it now, but it's very close to Club Valderrama, famous, you know, famous golf course. And again, I look back with such fondness at how that trip in the sunshine, golfing together with my wife, at a time when we were healing our relationship too, was very special. And golf played a very integral part in that. And I then also remember around that time too, I mentioned the Cults Lads Championship earlier on. That was the 2019 iteration of that, came in Inverness that year. And I remember we played a McDonald Hotels Resort, Spey Valley golf course. And end of day one on the Friday, usual summertime, not great weather in Scotland. We come in a bit beaten up by the weather, having played Spey Valley. We went into Inverness to a curry house that night. None of the guys knew I'd stopped drinking yet. They were about to find out with a rude awakening, where the waitress goes around the table, takes an order from all these 12, 16 guys. Who drinks for anyone? What can I get for you guys? Pint of Kingfisher? Pint of Kingfisher? Pint Kingfisher? Yeah. Oh, pint Kingfisher. Diet Coke for you, sir? Way! Now, of course, I get ripped. There's this, like, the way I remember it is, like, there's this, like, all the eyes on me. It's like, oh, Diet Coke, oh, good one, mate. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I just wanted to the earth to swallow me up, because I felt so embarrassed, you know. But and I had to build myself up to that so much, you know, and that caused me a lot of shame, anxiety, embarrassment. And I guess the reason I tell this story in particular is one key reason, I think, is because what I have found both then and over the years since then, and attending these golf trips with big groups of guys, is it always seems to be the case that in big groups, guys are seemingly, I don't know if incapable is the word, of kind of being empathetic. And the go-to thing is just to absolutely rip each other. But what was so interesting was how when we left that restaurant that night, I would walk out and several of the guys individually would come up to me and say, are you okay, mate? You know, is there a reason you're not drinking? And they would ask these questions out of a genuine place of concern and care. But it makes me think, and if I could say this to any of my guy friends that are watching or listening to this now, is let's think about how in those situations and where a man chooses to be vulnerable in a group setting, or if he does something which, like ordering a Diet Coke when everyone else is ordering a beer, don't mock him. You know, just stop and think. There could be a reason why he's doing that. Now, I don't resent anyone for that. You know, I understand why it happened. And I truly value and cherish the fact that those guys would come up to me individually afterwards and check in on me. But again, I would just love it if, as men, we could get to a place where the compassion that we show for each other in a one-to-one setting gets replicated in a group setting as well. And so then, starting to bring me up to, we're on the back nine now, folks, and how has golf helped me in my sobriety? I've talked already about how certainly in the immediate aftermath of me stopping drinking, how golf helped, you know, going out golfing on my own, going on that trip to Spain with my wife. I think what does help me now is when I, you know, I feel comfortable to be able to go to these golf trips each year with big groups of guys, all of whom or most of whom drink and I don't. And because they've got accustomed to me not drinking, they get it now. They understand and they don't expect me to drink. And they'll always say, hey, mate, can I buy you an alcohol-free beer, which I like an alcohol-free beer. That means a lot to me, where they actually take my sobriety seriously. And also I think, I hope and I feel like, and where golf is helping me and then I'm helping other golfers, is in those settings, like, you know, we'll have dinner at the end of a day's round of golf. I just love the camaraderie, as I've talked about before, that you get in those kind of group settings in golf. And then the kind of the very open, vulnerable, honest, emotional conversations that you can have together as men in particular. You know, I think that side of golf has definitely helped me, and the behaviors of fellow golfers that are compassionate and understanding helps me in my sobriety. Where the open comes into this is, I remember in 2019, I was in a terrible place to begin with. Like, I was in a really, really dark headspace and I could barely get out of bed, let alone make it downstairs to the sofa. But for the 4 days from, what would that have been, I guess Thursday the 18th of July 2019 through to the Sunday the 21st of July 2019, watching the 2019 Open at Royal Portrush, the theatre, the experience of watching that wonderful, the broadcasting is phenomenal with the Open, and the stories that they get told, the tapestry of everything, it's very special. But to see not just the golf, but to see how people like Rory McIlroy having an emotional moment on national television, being interviewed by Tim Barter. People remember that year, that was Rory's home Open in Northern Ireland. It meant so much to him. He didn't make the cut. And for him to cry like that and be emotional and vulnerable, I look back now and the fact that I remember it so clearly, it's really struck a chord with me and it helped me. And it would be remiss of me or quite corny or trite for me to say that watching the 2019 Open saved my life. But for me, there is something here in the power of the theater of watching the Open, which it helped me heal when I needed it the most. And that is why the 2019 Open, although it was a painful time in my life, it was a very important and meaningful time in my life. And that is why, much in the same way, I remember my first drink at the age of 15, and I can't remember the first round of golf I ever played, I certainly remember the 2019 Open more than I remember any other Open in history. And so that's why I'm looking forward so much to watching the Open at Royal Troon this week. And so maybe to round this out, so I've talked about how golf has helped my sobriety. Let's flip it around. How has sobriety helped my golf? Well, I go on these golf trips now, and I actually, at the end of them, experience kind of like a bit of a come down, like an emotional blues come down at the end of having spent 3 days in the company of, you know, fellow golfers, fellow men who I love as human beings and who I count as close friends and who I only get to see maybe once a year, and golf allows us to do that. There was a time back, way back when I used to drink, where not only would I have to contend with the emotional come down, I would then have to contend with that times 10 because I had a cumulative hangover from the previous 3 days debauchery. I don't have to contend with that anymore. And thank goodness, really, because that would only ever get worse, like I say, over time. And then I think the fact that now I feel comfortable in the knowledge that I don't need to take a drink to feel comfortable on a golf course, to overcome first tee nerves or to not shank or flub a chip. You know, I can work on those things now because they still cause me nerves and anxiety, don't get me wrong. But there are more healthy ways of me managing that. There are more healthy ways of me managing that that don't involve drinking. like practicing, like, yeah, practicing on the short game area or taking it out into real practice out in the golf course, or exercise and diet, therapy, you know, all of these things that are just way healthier practices for me than drinking. And so before we wrap this up, we putt out on the 18th and head into the clubhouse for a nice orange squash, I will just again ask for your support in the following ways. Please follow this podcast on your podcasting platform of choice. Taking Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts, for example, where I seem to find that about most of the people that listen to this podcast seem to consume it through those platforms. You will find, if you're listening to this podcast through there, you'll be able to see there's a little follow button, the plus follow button. Please click on that, because that, if you care about this podcast and value it in the same way I do, then that is one of the best ways you can help it grow. And it's a free way to help it grow too. So it'll take just a few seconds of your time. The other thing I'll say is, like I say, if this is touched you or inspired you in some way, or you feel like others could benefit from hearing it, please share the episode with others and then get in touch. I will put my contact details in the show notes, and I'd love to hear from you directly. If this is, like I say, if this has resonated with you, because, for example, as I've said before, and I'll say again, and I'll keep saying, is that I want Golf Yourself Healthy to be this safe space where people feel like they can come, listen, not be judged, hear things that hopefully they can relate to, and actually then feel comfortable in opening up to, you know. And you can do that one-to-one with me. I genuinely mean that. Like, you know, you can contact me directly if there's anything that you're going through that you think I can help with in some way, even if it's just a chat and to let off some steam. That for me is one of the best ways that I think we can grow this community together in this trusting and psychologically safe way. So please keep that in mind. But that's, I think, enough for now. I'll leave you with this, as I always do. Always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.